I'm joined by Dr. Will Murphy of the Matter Day Institute of Education, whose new book deals with political imprisonment during the years 1912 to 1921. Just put Fleischmann's internment in some sort of context for us, if you would, Will.
Well, I suppose, as you mentioned in your intro, with the outbreak of the war, there was immediate concern around these German and Austrian subjects who were in Ireland. So very quickly, there were two pieces of legislation that were introduced. One was called the Alien Restrictions Act, and the other was called the Defence of the Realm Act, which people are probably more familiar with. And that immediately empowered the authorities to intern these subjects who they feared might effectively be a fifth column within the country. Alois was arrested quite early on, and there were some who were arrested quite early on, and then he was released again. And the numbers slowly build in Ireland. By December 1914, there are 149 internees in Oldcastle Camp. But by the middle of 1916, there are actually nearly 600 internees in Oldcastle. And Oldcastle was a workhouse. The rate of internment varied according to concern, I suppose, around cooperation with Irish nationalists, which is a particular concern in Ireland, but also around the fears of attacks upon Germans in some instances. So in the very early days of the war, for instance, there were attacks on pork butchers owned by Germans around Dublin, on Wexford Street and the South Circular Road. And then after the sinking of the Lusitania, there was a lot of anti-German feeling across both Britain and Ireland. There were a series of riots in Britain. And in the aftermath of that, again, you see a peak in the number of German subjects who were interned.
Tell us a little bit about Oldcastle Camp. As you say, it was the local workhouse. And of course, whenever you hear the term workhouse, the assumption is that this was a fairly grim place to be.
Yeah, the conditions seem to have been reasonably okay. Oldcastle workhouse was available because there were very few inmates in it at the outbreak of the war.
There wasn't much poverty in North Meath, Carry on.
The other thing that was useful about it was there was a railway station about a mile away. So you could get all the internees to the railway station into the camp, and they fortified the workhouse. So they put barbed wire entanglements and towers overlooking the workhouse and things like that. So it was reasonably secure. But the internees could leave a few days a week and go on walks they were guarded on those walks. And a sort of camp culture built up, which was very similar to sort of the people are probably familiar with Frongoch in Wales, that the Irish internees were sent to after 1916. And prisoner of war camps generally, there were concerts. Alois Fleischmann obviously was very involved in that kind of thing. There was also football, was regularly played inside the camp. There were two internees died in the camp, and one of them died actually due to a football injury.
Oh dear.
The internees were given a lot of space to, work on small productions of arts and crafts and painting. Some of those they tended to sell on outside to the locals. And there were a number of attempts to escape out of the camp as well. There was a man called Deichmann who made it all the way to Limerick. He was actually on a ship about to leave Limerick when eventually he was recaptured. And there was another internee called Bockmeyer who tried twice, and on the second occasion he was actually shot while attempting to escape. And he's the second internee who dies in Oldcastle.
We received a piece during the week written by Brendan Jenkinson about his great-grandfather's incarceration at Oldcastle during World War One. It's highly illuminating, and if we have time on next week's programme, we'll try and share an extract with you. But let's move on then to the German plot. What was the German plot, and who was arrested?
Well, the German plot really occurred in May 1918. People are probably familiar with the internees after 1916 were jailed under the Defence of the Realm Act. And it was justified on the basis that they had hostile associations with Germany, which was obviously true in 1916.
Our gallant allies in Europe.
Exactly. But by 1918, you've got the conscription crisis in early 1918, and there's a build-up of Sinn Féin, and Sinn Féin are growing. And the British government in Ireland decide they want to act against the leadership of Sinn Féin. So essentially, they allege that there is ongoing associations between the leadership Sinn Féin and Germany. And on that basis, they justify the internment of eventually over 90 men, mostly a few women, including Markovic and Maud Gonne, who are the leadership of Sinn Féin, and they want to take out of the country effectively and try and hamper Sinn Féin in that period. And they hold them between May 1918 and March 1919. They hold them in Britain and across a series of prisons in England.
They don't hold Eamon de Valera for long, though.
Well, they don't hold Eamon for long. He eventually, very famous escape, Eamon de Valera escapes
Lincoln Prison
in February 1919. And, escape is a very effective strategy, really, for not just you get out, but there's all the ridicule that attaches to the authority for failing to hold on to you. And obviously that story is very famous with the key in the cake, or multiple keys in the cake, and trying to get the right one to fit the door, and eventually they get out and all that kind of stuff.
And was he or was he not dressed as a woman and all this kind of stuff? Yeah. What was the status of the prisoners who were arrested as part of the German plot? I mean, how were they treated, for example?
Well, they were treated, they were certainly not convicts, so therefore they had a much easier regime. So they were definitely internees. They could associate with each other, they could have food brought in and out to them if they wanted. Some of the time they didn't, because they wanted to insist that the authorities would feed them, and if the authorities had arrested them, then the authorities would feed them. But some of them did. Constance Markovic, for instance, had champagne brought in at Christmas 1918. There was a case of wine sent in at Christmas 1918 for other prisoners, including they smuggled a bottle of whiskey in. Whiskey wasn't allowed, but wine was. They had newspapers. They were allowed visits if they wanted, but actually they refused visits again because there were restrictions on their visits. They couldn't talk about politics to the visitors, so they said, well, on that basis, we're not going to have any visitor.
And when were they released?
They were released in March 1918, obviously because the war has ended, in the first instance, is one of the reasons.
March 1919.
1919, yeah. Sorry. Because the war has ended. Also because there is increasing campaign in Ireland. For instance, there's a Stopping the Hunt campaign in Ireland, deliberately organised to try and stop the elites from practising their leisure until the prisoners are released. Obviously, Sinn Féin have also won the 1918 general election, so that's increased the pressure to release the prisoners. Sorry.
There we will have to leave it here. Very, very good. Thank you very much indeed for that. And Will's book is Political Imprisonment and the Irish 1912 to 1921 by William Murphy, as I said, is published by Oxford. Next week, our offerings will include the boom and bust of Nelson's Pillar and the 70th anniversary of D-Day. Until then, from me, Miles Dungan, and producer Yeti Redmond, goodbye and thanks for listening.